So yeah, this is Mike tells you a little bit about the context of this presentation. I'll give you a little bit of background on the Community Health Inclusion Index itself. I have no relationships to disclose. So a little bit of background on the CHI. It's a project that me and Dr. Immer have been working on and Vijay has been working on for a few years now. And we recently published it in the journal BMC Public Health, which is an open access journal that you guys can have access to. And the purpose of it is to assess the degree to which communities support inclusion of people with disabilities in healthy living initiatives. And, you know, we really tried to examine inclusion and define inclusion through that process. And I'll kind of go through a little bit about how the CHI was structured. It's a multi-level instrument that can be used across a variety of settings. There's a picture of a woman in a wheelchair going grocery shopping. This is one of the types of settings that we looked at. The way it's structured is around these different categories. Let's say that the first one is sectors. So it's structured around these different sectors of the community: schools, workplaces, community institutions, healthcare environments, and the community at large. Within those sectors, we're looking at specific types of venues that are focused on these three topic areas: physical activity, healthy eating, and community design. So an example of a physical activity venue would be a gym or a fitness center. A healthy eating venue would be a farmer's market, grocery store, community garden. And community design is more the built environment and transportation. Then within each of those, we're looking at these different domains of inclusion that have to do with the built environment, equipment, programs, staff, and policy. And if you look at the grades, you see there's all these kind of mirror very well with the work that Carrie has done. A lot of that having to do with, you know, we're kind of looking at what existing measures are out there and really how public health has defined looking at community health and not trying to redefine that, but take how they've structured it and adapt it and define it in the way that we think is important. In the paper, you read about how we established content validity through focus groups and expert panels. We looked at the internal consistency of the constructs on the CHI that had a Cronbach alpha of 0.7 to 0.965. There's a story behind that, the three digits there that we can talk about later. Lastly, there was a good inter-rater agreement across the different venues that I mentioned, most of the venues showing 0.8 to 1 category, the strongest agreement for inter-rater agreement. So the purpose of this presentation actually is to establish the construct validity of some of the specific constructs related to pedestrian and transportation infrastructure. And I'm kind of going to keep it simple to these six constructs that I wanted to look at, which have to do with features of the streetscape. Again, if you don't know, streetscape is the different features in the sidewalk and street that you encounter as you're walking or rolling down a street. So there's appealing streetscape features, negative streetscape features. We look at transit accessibility, so different features of transportation that are accessible, the intersections, paths, and parking accessibility. So some examples of that, an example of an appealing walking feature would be a sidewalk buffer, right, that separates the walkers, pedestrians, and people using wheelchairs from people who are driving. And I don't know about you guys, but this is one of the things that I have three kids, and when I'm walking with them, having this buffer is really a safety feature that I think we don't always think about, but really does impact, I think, your decision on which parts of the street you'll go to. Negative walking feature would be a vacant building. Aspects of a accessible path are detectable warnings and curb cuts. Aspects of intersections that help for inclusion are countdown signals and auditory signals that are part of an intersection. Parking would include things like van accessible parking, and an accessible transit stop would have space for someone in a wheelchair to be covered, whereas if you have a bench going the full length of the transit stop, that prevents someone in a wheelchair from using it. The significance is that in the literature about physical activity and aspects of the built environment, the pedestrian environment can support access to healthy living opportunities, being able to use transportation, public transportation, to get to sites in your community that where you can be physically active or obtain healthy foods. There's also some level of physical activity involved in the transportation itself. Going and using the transportation, walking or rolling, generates some what's called transport-related physical activity. And then the aspects around the site are important too, just because people who are there for the whole day, often when you think about your workplace, are you able to walk or roll around your workplace? And these are the elements that would define that. So what we're looking at here is concurrent validity, which is a type of construct validity where you're looking at the degree to which your measure is associated with another measure. And so we didn't have another measure that we had collected that we could use to compare to as far as another measure of accessibility. So what we wanted to look for was other measures that were readily available that would be associated with accessibility. So median household income and level of urbanity were two measures that are available, publicly available from the American Community Survey, that we could look at to see their relationship with these Qi constructs. And our expectation is that there would be positive correlations between these constructs and these community factors. You think of more higher income communities have more funds to support the building of this type of infrastructure, and in more urban environments there's also there's more building of roadways and sidewalks. So that was our hypothesis to look at. A little bit about the field testing of the Qi. We get into more detail in this in the paper, but we looked at 154 sites across 15 geographically diverse communities. We used a purposeful sampling technique by geography, urbanity, and income. And evaluations were completed by local raters who were trained at a two-day workshop, many of which were people from local independent living centers. So the variables that I used was within the Qi constructs was the first one was the proportion of items correct within those constructs, and then we're seeing how they relate to these measures that I got from the ACS 5-year estimates, which allow you to get down to lower geographies such as census places. I looked at the median household income and then urbanity, and categorized urbanity into urban, suburban, rural, just to make it kind of easier to understand. There are lots of different ways to categorize urbanity, which I might mention later. So the analysis examined the correlations between each construct and each ACS measure. So an example is to kind of give you the overview of this. One of the communities we looked at was Nogales, Arizona, where we evaluate, it's on the border with Mexico and Arizona, where local community raters evaluated 12 sites, and at each site they looked at each of these constructs. And so for each of the constructs that I'm looking at, we're examining the correlations across the sites within these 15 communities. So what do the results look like? Here's just a distribution of the types of communities that we looked at. So we have a fairly good distribution of urban, suburban, rural, and low, medium, and high-income communities. And then in this slide, we're going to look at the household median income going from low, medium, to high. And the numbers there are the scores on each of these constructs. Okay. And what we see for the most part, just to kind of look at the pattern, is for the most part, in low-income communities, they have a lower score on these constructs, and in higher-income communities, they have a higher score. So, going down, walking supports makes sense. You're going to see these more in higher-income communities. The walking barriers was reverse-coded, so that's why you see a higher number there. One of the ones that doesn't follow this pattern is transit, right? And in some ways that does kind of make sense, because who uses transportation, low-income individuals, and it's mostly built in around low-income communities. So it makes sense that a transit score would be higher in low-income populations. The next slide shows these scores again with our urbanity measure. And what we see here a little bit different is actually in a lot of these constructs, the suburban category has a higher score on our chief constructs. So we see that for walking supports, walking barriers, and paths and parking. And, you know, in some ways that makes sense as well because a lot of suburban areas are more higher income and do have funds to make the appealing walking appealing walking features and other of these built environment features. One of the ones that's different is transportation and intersections. So we see that transportation again in urban areas has a higher T score. That makes sense. More urban areas have more transportation infrastructure. They are also most of the time having more intersection infrastructure, so there's more of the curb cuts, there's more of the countdown signals in urban areas than in suburban areas where you do have less people walking and rolling around. Just so you know, we for these scores, we didn't penalize communities that let's say didn't have transportation, so rural communities that didn't have transportation, they weren't penalized for it. Because, you know, not having transportation is not necessarily something you can control within the, these constructs. So then looking at the statistical correlations here for income, we're showing the Pearson's correlation, and we see that they do have some statistical significance there between the constructs and median household income. Again, in the direction that we expect for the most part, except for transit, where low-income populations, low-income communities have higher transit scores. And then the same thing with urbanity, where we see also some mostly statistical significant relationships, except for walking barriers, where we saw, in urban communities, you do have more of these walking type barriers, things like vacant buildings and litter and graffiti and things like that. The one that was not significant was parking, which is somewhat so variable really between the different organizations, between the different types of communities, that we didn't really see a relationship there. Oh, went backwards. So I think this was a preliminary study, but it did show that the Qi construct showed some good concurrent validity. And I think these measures can be used to assess community health inclusion in a variety of settings, as we used a really diverse sample to collect this data. Some limitations. We're going to do some further testing is needed to account for the nested structure of community level measures. So the household median income and urbanity are measures at the place level. Our measures were taken at the site level, so there's some nesting that we need to account for that we're going to do in the further analysis. And then some additional sensitivity analysis around the urban-rural designation. So I mentioned I broke them up into three categories, but you can also break them up into 10 categories and 12 categories that the USDA used. So I think doing some additional analysis on how we broke it up might help, do the sensitivity analysis. Some future directions is really, like Carrie and Jim had said earlier, taking these tools out into the community, into community healthy living initiatives that are doing this type of programming and looking at the built environment. There's a lot of these other sessions. If you go to, you'll hear how different communities are trying to change their active living environments, and being able to talk with those communities and let them know about these tools and how they can find out how to make them more inclusive is an important next step that we're going to be working on. Another thing we're going to be working on, Jim kind of showed that slide of the different types of audiences, and I think that's one of the things we're going to try to work on next is developing short and chi versions that are specific to some of these different sectors and users to make it more easy for people to use, because as we know, taking the time to do an assessment, go through all the items, it takes time, it takes money, and you really kind of have to make it as concise and appealing for them to use. More info about the Qi, you can find out on NICPAD website, as well as the article I mentioned earlier. And that's all.